player.
Supernatural.
Is anyone here? Can you please give us a sign?
Supernatural. Confessions.
All right, welcome to another edition of Supernatural Confessions. My name is Tim O. Joining me tonight is Eugene Tay. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing good.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we managed to get together. You've been doing all right? More investigations?
Not so much investigations, but there's been a spike in the number of confessions that's been coming in. And now it's Halloween period, so I guess everyone's like getting already be spooked out.
Yeah, you would think that during the Halloween period, that's when things start getting busy, paranormal-wise. But strangely enough, when it actually comes to real investigations, things seem to have gotten slow. Maybe this is like a holiday time for the hantus.
In Asia especially, the seventh month is the peak period. Like, if you're talking about the Chinese seventh month, that's where all the real haunting happens, the real investigation takes place. But for Halloween, most of us are just really more towards being entertained, you know. This is more of a scare factor. So you get people actually talking about ghost story, but not so much real investigation.
Right, well, maybe the hantus need to take a break. And I see since they figure humans are going to be scaring themselves, they can just go on vacation, right?
Maybe. Or maybe you won't even know which is the difference now.
All right. So for those of you who are new to Supernatural Confessions, welcome, welcome, welcome. This is our podcast where we talk about all things supernatural and paranormal. And of course, if you would like to get in on the action, we'd like to invite you to head over to our official website.
www.supernaturalconfessions.com. There you'll find the link to our podcast, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook groups, whatever. It's all there. At www.supernaturalconfessions.com.
And we'd also like to invite you to submit your entries as well if you have stories, encounters of your own, or encounters that you've heard that were told to you. We'd love to hear from you as well, and maybe we can talk about them right here on our podcast, okay? Tonight, we're going to be doing something that I've actually been quite excited to cover for quite a while, yeah? That's hotels here in Singapore. I think now that we're in an age where we all take a lot of holidays, you know, sometimes we go overseas. When we don't go overseas, we take staycations. We check into a lot of hotels, and sometimes we hear some hotels are scarier than others, right?
I think a hotel story crosses boundaries. When we talk about some of the horrors on some of the previous podcasts, we talk about things like Pontiana or Toyo. These are very Asian-centric horror. You know, Japan have their own list of monsters. In the West, they have their own horror stories. But when it comes to haunted hotels, it's across the nation. And you know, no matter which country you're from, you have a hotel, you have a story that happens right there in that room of yours.
If I would ask you straight up, what kind of entities tend to tie themselves to hotels? What would you say?
Two kinds usually. Either the spiritual entity, the one that is loitering around or being carried by travelers, or demonic entities. These are the two primary kind of hauntings that we get from hotel stories.
Now, when you say that you have spirits that follow travelers from overseas, is that possible? Can a spirit tie themselves to a person? The person crosses over the ocean, comes to another country, checks into the hotel, and then obviously when he leaves the hotel, when he checks out, the thing that he brought doesn't check out with him.
It's a good question. I wanted to keep this for the later part of this discussion, because one of the questions that you asked me off air was, what is my take on why hotels seems to attract or draw all these entities and, you know, all these haunted stories, haunted hotels. It's common, you know, in almost every single hotel around the world. So my theory is that when you have a place, especially like hotels where you get to stay and there's a very high turnaround of people coming in and out, and when you travel, sometimes you bring things along with you, unknowingly or knowingly. We are talking about people who maybe they have entities with them, or we have people who actually play with black magic and they willingly bring entities along with them on the ride. Or you could just be traveling around some place, carry something dirty, something hop onto your ankle or your back, and then when you go to the hotel and you shower and you leave your clothes there, the entity gets left behind.
I see. Do you think some people intentionally do stuff like that? They know something has attached themselves to them. They want to leave it somewhere, and they want to leave it as far away as possible from where they stay, from their home. So they intentionally travel as far as they can to a way far away country and leave it there.
To answer that question on do people actually rent hotel rooms to deliberately release entity, I have been in situations where I was invited to be part of a group to document and to actually oversee the whole process. This lady, she was trying to get an entity out of her body. We have the spiritual master who says, okay, but I don't have a place. Can we do it at your place? She says, obviously you can't because my parents are around. And then she says, why don't we just get a hotel room and we'll do the cleansing there. So, you know, and I was there, right? So I can personally vouch that that has happened. People do bring their rituals to hotel room to cleanse.
Okay. Then the, whatever comes out of that person's body just ties itself to that particular room?
Either that room or that hotel. Mm. Because all you need is in one hotel with 1,000 rooms, all you need is just one haunted room to create a whole story and the legend continues.
Okay. And of course, you've told us that you've also conducted investigations at some hotels, yes?
Yeah, and I have some personal stories from overseas, some experiences that I can share about. In Singapore, the one that I did was Raintree Hotel. I'm not sure if you are familiar with Raintree Hotel.
Actually, you know what? Hang on to that thought. We are going to get to Raintree and tell those of our listeners who are not familiar with where Raintree Hotel is and what it used to be in just a little bit, okay? But first, let's talk about one hotel, which is actually very near to where Raintree is currently located, all right? Mm. This is a hotel formerly known as Meridian Changi Village Hotel.
Okay.
Okay. Now, one particular person says that I checked into the Le Meridian Changi Village Hotel, room 301, and this was many years ago.
Okay.
Now, we know you're quite the history buff. Can you tell us the connection between Changi and World War II?
Changi is notorious for being the spot where the Japanese soldiers would bring, round up the Chinese rebels, the locals, along the beach and behead them. Or shoot them, right? And leave their body on the beach. So the entire Changi coastal area, there have been many stories of sightings, Japanese soldiers, headless bodies. So that's how the legend sort of grew from Changi Village.
When it comes down to specifics, apparently on the 20th of February 1942, 66 Chinese males were executed on the stretch of Changi Beach. It was a part of a two-week campaign to purge the Singapore Chinese population of suspected anti-Japanese civilians, and apparently more than 1,000 men and boys were executed on the beaches of Changi, and this was along the same stretch where Le Meridian Changi Village Hotel was. Now, this guy continues to say that after he spent a few hours on the beach, he headed back to the hotel. Now, because he had an early flight the next day, he went to bed. Now, he says, at one point, I remember looking at the clock, seeing that it was 11 p.m. I shut my eyes again to return to sleep. And at this point, I felt my cat jump on the bed. And then I remembered, I'm here alone in a hotel in Singapore. Who is on the bed with me? Now, I tried to look, and suddenly I felt a weight on me, holding me down and pressing me into the bed. I was so scared, and all I could think of was, I've got the power, and you are not going to take me. I said that over and over again. At one point, I started hearing pounding on the wall. And at first, I thought it was water pipes rattling, but suddenly I wasn't so sure. I tried to turn my head to see what was on the bed, but I couldn't move. I tried to use my arms, and I couldn't move my body. I kept chanting to myself, I've got the power and you are not going to take me. Now finally, I was able to kick my legs up and free myself from the bed. I kicked twice and I threw the weight off of me. And I lay there on the bed in the dark, scared. The clock read 11:10. I didn't go back to sleep and I flew off the next morning. And I haven't been back to Singapore since. And by the way, the cat, the one I thought who jumped on the bed that night while I was in that hotel, died a few months later. So this story comes from a traveler. Are you surprised when you hear about stuff like this?
That sounds like a classic sleep paralysis that science tries to debunk all the time. And for with regards to the number of executions that happened on Changi Beach, if you actually read through some of the historical text, the actual number of execution is easily 66,000 and not 600 or in the 66 range that was reported by the Japanese. And if you go to the Bicentennial Show, they also stated that, you know, history says in terms of number 66 or 600, but the actual number goes into the tens of thousands.
Wow.
Yeah, so you are finding a spot that has massacre, lots of pain and suffering, a lot of residual energy is in the sand, it's in the ground. And if you think about 1942, that's not that far away, you know, it's less than a century old. And you have buildings and hotels and castles around the world that's even older than that and still have haunting. So if you say that, you know, Singapore is modern, you don't have any more ghosts, I would kind of try to, you know, disagree with that because...
Yeah.
You know, that kind of death in a single location will have to trigger some form of paranormal activity.
All right, so you mentioned sleep paralysis. I decided to go to the NHS website, right? And they actually describe the symptoms of sleep paralysis as this. Number one, you find it difficult to take deep breaths, almost as if your chest is being crushed or restricted. You might be able to move your eyes, although some people say that they can't. You have a sensation that there's someone or something in the room with you, meaning you start to hallucinate. Many people feel this presence wishes to harm them. And another symptom is you feel very frightened. So this pretty much describes everything that this guy who went to that hotel was experiencing.
Okay, sleep paralysis is a scientific term because this phenomenon happens so often that science tried to peg an explanation to it. I'm not sure whether you have heard the interview with Jonathan and myself. We talk about sleep paralysis as well. He has a very interesting take on sleep paralysis. He believes that it's the human mind conjuring the horror in front of them. But he doesn't say that the horror doesn't exist. The horror exists, but how we interpret the horror is based on our own perception of what horror is to us. I'm going to take that concept one step further. And this is based on some of the stories I've read and hypotheses put up by other investigators. There is a spirit world and there is the material world, right? If you believe in the spirit world, or even if you don't believe in ghosts, but you believe in, you know, a higher power, you understand that there is a spirit world and there's a material world. Most of us can agree with that. Mm-hmm. When you are sleeping and your mind goes into a relaxed state, right? So I think that's, they call it a delta wave, where you are in that state of consciousness that straddles between the waking world and sleep. Now, a lot of research have been put into where people do spirit travel, out of body experience. That is the point in time where their mind is relaxed and almost to the point of sleep, where their brain wave is at the delta level, right?
Yep.
Then they get this out-of-body experience. Now, if we believe that there is a material and spiritual world, why is it so far-fetched to believe that when you are sleeping, and it always happens when you are sleeping, that's why it's called sleep paralysis, you begin to see all these things. So my understanding is the spirit world and the material world becomes very thin and the soul travels through to the other side. Now, when you talk about conscious and energy and manifestation, we don't see ghosts in the way that is depicted in Hollywood. You know, a faceless person, a headless person, or a lady always in white with long hair. That becomes the part where our conscious mind, the part that is still awake, interprets the horror based on what we know and have seen.
So what you're saying is that we might actually be seeing way more horrific things than what our physical minds are interpreting.
Yes. So when he can't wake up, he felt something sitting beside him. He saw it as a cat. Now, I personally believe that what he's feeling is a very real phenomenon. Like he has gone over to the spirit world and that experience that he had was real. Now, how he sees it is the part of his mind that is semi-conscious, the lucid mind, right? And that part of his mind interprets it as a cat jumping on board, or to some people, something squatting on their chest or standing in a corner.
Or the sounds of the pounding that he was hearing through the walls.
When you're in the spirit world, a lot of things happen. You hear pounding, you see lights, you see things that don't make sense in the logical mind. So how he interpreted it is pounding on the walls. What it could be is just, you know, footsteps, the dead spirits, you know, they're marching along the way. It could be so many different things.
It could be the drums of hell.
Maybe, right? I like to think so. But the takeaway for this type of stories to me is that such phenomena is very real. The spirit world is very real. And my suggestion for anyone who's asking me this question is it sleep paralysis where your body is, you know, not awake, but your mind is, or you actually transverse over to the spirit world? I believe it's the latter.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to another hotel, which is also located around the Changi area. You mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast, and that is Raintree Hotel. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with what Raintree Hotel used to be, would you educate us, Eugene?
Raintree Hotel is part of an old building at the foot of the hill where Changi Hospital is. Still, mm-hmm. the old Changi Hospital, right? Back then, I'm not sure if you were one of those young, foolish teenagers who try to scare yourself silly, thrill seekers. That building always had a light on. And most of us who investigated or played around the area, or there were stories that we shared that there is a entity there, a very strong entity in that building.
Hang on. Now, Raintree Hotel, was it actually part of Changi Hospital or was it part of the old commando barracks? Because I think there's a little bit of a mix-up around that.
It's part of the old commando barracks area,
mm-hmm.
but it's not on the Hendon campsite. It's at the foot of the hill where the old Changi Hospital is.
I see.
So it's not part of old Changi Hospital, but it's closer to old Changi Hospital than it is to commando barracks.
Right. And of course, when we hear about old commando barracks, we have talked about rumors of a portal, you know, involving the painting of a demon that kind of allowed spirits to come through. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a different hotel. That's across the road. That's Changi Cove. That's not Raintree.
Oh.
There are two parts to this story now. The story with the face on the wall is commando barracks that is across the road where the current Changi Cove Hotel is.
Wow. So essentially, we might have another haunted hotel along that stretch. Well, yeah, that makes me feel a lot better about staying in Changi. All right, but back to Raintree Hotel. It's pretty funny. I came across this hotel booking site. And you know, hotel booking sites are usually meant to entice travelers to make bookings at that particular hotel, right? Mm. And they try to paint the hotel in the most wonderful, positive way as they can. This is basically what was written on this hotel booking website. Raintree Hotel is located near the now abandoned Changi Hospital, which was occupied by Japanese soldiers during World War II. It is said that the Japanese soldiers used to torture prisoners of war in that place, and so screams, eerie noises, and whispers can still be heard around the premises of the hotel. How is this in any way meant to entice anybody to book a room at this particular hotel?
You know, if you can't bury the past, you can't hide the fact that it's near the old Changi Hospital. I think the best way to do it, to do business, is to embrace the fact that it might be haunted. You might actually get thrill seekers to want to book the place.
Let's talk about your experience. I know you're actually one of the few people who've actually booked a room at the Raintree Hotel. Tell us about it.
In fact, I believe I was the first person who stayed in Raintree Hotel. The very
really?
First guy, yeah.
Okay.
No, I live in Pasir Ris, so me going down to Changi is pretty common to have supper. And I would pass by the place very often. I love Changi area. And I would see the construction happening. And when the hotel was being constructed, I was actually there with some friends walking onto the grounds and seeing the whole construction taking place. So when the hotel was finally erected, before they actually release it to the public, they have a soft launch. Right? And it's only $98 back then. It's about $140 now, maybe even more. But back then, soft launch, $98. I was the first guy up there to the counter and says, "Give me your most haunted room." My exact words.
How did the lady react? Did she try to brush it off as if, "Oh, no, sir, this hotel is not haunted at all"?
I expected her to say that as part of policy. In fact, she goes like, "Most haunted room, okay, I'm going to give you this room." You know, it's not like even like a denying the fact. It's like,
so she had a specific room in mind when you said that.
Yeah. So I remember this conversation because I was pleasantly surprised. That to me was a silent acknowledgement that you have a haunted room here.
Did the bellboy come and bring your luggage to the room to help you check in?
No, I'm a cheapskate. I don't get a bellboy to carry my stuff because I have
to. You just don't want to give the tip, right?
So yeah, I carry my own bag up.
Okay. All right. So you end up in the room and tell us about the experience then.
They maintain the facade of the whole place. The room is clean. It's new. It's brand new. You can smell the finishing, the wood. But when you walk out to the balcony, you could really see the trees. The floor was like cement-screed. The pillars were all old. But it didn't feel haunted. Honestly, when I moved in, it felt clean and new. I did not feel spooked up.
Right.
But that night, okay, and I cannot, you know, Tim, if there's a haunting, even if there is a 20% chance, I'll be the first guy to tell you, "Look, I think there might be a haunting," right?
Yeah.
So that night, there were things that happened in the room that made me think there might be a haunting, but for the life of me, I cannot find proof of haunting. For example, my balcony door. One of the things I do as part of my habit when I go into a hotel room is to make sure that my rooms are all locked, because I have this fear that when I sleep, people would come into my room, right? And I'm not talking about fear of supernatural, just people robbing me. That's my fear, right? So I will always check the door, double lock or chain, and I'll leave my toilet door open. But in this case, I don't have to leave my toilet door open because it's glass panel. You can see through. You can see through inside, right? So I got all my devices with me, you know, my motion detector, camera and everything. That night, I heard footsteps, right? Like outside the corridors, you know, like, I'll open the door and I'll check, there's nothing there. But that itself is not haunting because it's an old building. Maybe someone's walking on the third floor, but sound echoes up to the fourth floor. So I wasn't jumping to conclusion. I was trying my best to get evidence. But one of the things I cannot explain, right? And the camera at that point of time shut off by itself. It was not on battery. It was actually connected to a hard power supply.
Yeah.
In middle of the night, it shut off. My camera that was pointing towards the balcony shut off on its own.
What were you doing? Were you asleep at this time? Did you even sleep that night?
Yeah, I slept. I eventually slept because I was waiting around, and investigation is boring stuff. You sit around, do nothing, and wait for things to happen. So after a couple of hours wait, I just dozed off. But the funny thing was, the camera that was pointing towards the balcony door turned off by itself in the middle of the night. When I woke up in the morning, the balcony door was open. I was very sure I locked the balcony door.
Now, this balcony door, can it be opened from the outside, or is the latch on the inside?
No, latch is on the inside.
Right.
All right, so the door's open. I don't have any evidence to check where that the latch, you know, goes down on its own, because for some reason, middle of the night, only that camera pointing to the door failed to record anything.
And it wasn't some form of setting with the camera where no activity, so it just goes off?
No. Usually these cameras, the default setting is for it to run.
When you were checking out, did any of the receptionists give you weird looks, like they expected you to have experienced something?
She was such a darling. I actually had a conversation with her. Like, I spoke to her about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, obviously the first staff here, you know, pioneer batch, you know, do you stay a night yourself? She's like, yeah, she stayed a night. There were prayers. There's a big altar at the back of the building. And she said that, you know, the management took a lot of effort to bless the place, consecrate the place, and she feels very comfortable. She don't think that it's haunted anymore.
Well, thanks for that. Let's move on to another hotel, all right? I got to tell you, some of the best hantu stories that I've gotten while researching tonight's episode was really TripAdvisor.
I would.
You know, people from all around the world can't wait to leave a review over just about anything, including haunted experiences as well. So we're going to move to Goodwood Park Hotel. Do you know anything about Goodwood Park Hotel?
It's an old building. There used to be clubs there. Stayed there a couple of nights, but usually when I'm drunk, so I think even if the ghosts appear in front of me, I wouldn't have noticed.
I gotta say, I've never stayed at Goodwood Park Hotel, but I love the restaurants there. In fact, like Alma is one of my favorite restaurants. The food is so good, you could almost describe it as supernatural.
Oh. And you know the Durian Festival? You got to go there, Goodwood Park.
Oh, yeah. All right, so I came across this particular review from a guy called Dublin Robert, all right? He's from Spain. Stayed in Goodwood Park Hotel back in 2015, and you can find this on TripAdvisor. He says, I woke up one night and I found the light on in the bathroom. Now, I complained at the reception and they said they would fix it. But two nights later, the light was on and off again during the night, so it was flickering. I complained once again at reception. Now, what was strange is that they said my room was not haunted. I didn't even say it was. They even said they had gotten a priest from England to exorcise the hotel. They were offering me this information, even though I didn't say that the room was haunted, right? Now, they claimed that the lights going on and off was because of old wiring and that they would look at the lighting again. Now, that night, nothing happened. Now, it looks like Dublin Robert was very rich and he stayed at Goodwood Park Hotel for quite a number of nights. He said the following night, he started to hear noises and the lights once again took on a life of their own. Stuff started moving in the room. He would leave something in the safe, right? Uh-huh. And later it was moved to another position within the locked safe. Mm. Now, Robert says, one night I woke up and I was going to the bathroom, and just as I was about to enter, the light turned itself on. But you know what? There are no motion sensors in the room. It just came on by itself. Now, all in all, he made 4 reports to the receptionist during his stay, and he doesn't know what other conclusion he can reach other than that the room was haunted.
I think Goodwood Park is one of the oldest hotels in Singapore. It was built in 1900s, so a lot of stories, a lot of spirits are in the walls and in the ground itself, that entire hotel. I wouldn't be surprised to hear stories like that. And I believe him.
I'm just going to channel my inner ET, okay?
Yeah.
Who is our fellow host who's not able to join us tonight. And because he's a skeptic, I imagine him saying, well, you know, when it comes to flickering lights, that could easily be a wiring issue. But we've heard this particular story of flickering lights in so many different hotels or haunting environments. Could it be that really every hotel just happens to have bad wiring?
And the funny thing is, ET also believes that spirits are energy source. So why is it so hard to believe that when there's a spirit around, lights will flicker? That seems to me that's the most normal explanation. If my lights flicker, I would think it's a spirit and not so much bad wiring.
Yeah, and on top of that, right, the presence of spirits are known to suck energy and draw energy or electricity out from an area, right? If a light comes on, that could mean that there's no longer a spirit there, that when you came, the spirit left.
That's a very good point. That was exactly what I wanted to say as well. If you go to a room and something, light goes on, you, instead of being afraid, you should
be thankful.
Yes, because whatever it was standing there has already moved away.
Okay.
If you go into a room and then suddenly all the light goes off, then you start to get scared.
Yeah, then you want to be the one to leave.
Yes.
All right. Before we wrap up this particular episode, because we are going to have to extend this over a couple of installments, we have so many hotel stories. Eugene, you mentioned at the very beginning of this podcast that you have had experiences of your own in hotels.
Oh, Tim, so
Could
many.
Could you share some with us?
I think I'm going to share with you probably the one hotel that everyone has walked in and everyone has walked out saying, yes, there is something. Like, no matter how much of a skeptic you are, you cannot walk out of that hotel and say, yeah, bad wiring.
Okay.
Thankfully, the hotel no longer exists. It used to be along Killiney Road at the junction of Devonshire.
What hotel was this?
Mitre Hotel, M-I-T-R-E.
Oh, okay. I've been to Devonshire Road, but I've never actually stayed at that hotel.
Right now, it's a condo. I think it's a 10-story condo, I think. But that's one hotel where they only tore down less than a decade, right? And when we were there to investigate, we felt, right, and we brought psychics with us, we have investigation equipment with us, the rooms were haunted. Our devices were going off, we could capture hits and H's, dragging of chairs, and psychics could actually detect in each of the room what are the kind of spirits that are lingering behind.
How many rooms did you guys go into?
We really walked through the whole hotel.
And the hotel management actually allowed you guys to go through, do your investigations.
They knew that the hotel was haunted, and the lady in front, she is the only one who's mending the counter. And if you wanted to stay the night, you could. And she would actually tell you, these are the spirits around this area. And I felt she's been there for so long.
Maybe she was a spirit.
I honestly believe that, Tim. I honestly believe that there was a spirit in her already.
Wow. Can you tell us what were some of the stories that you had heard before you actually went in?
It was a hotel that was famous back in the early 1900s for being a layover spot for sailors. They would come down, they would meet women of leisure, and some of them, they would be pregnant, sailors would go back, and these girls would do a lot of abortion, and they would bury the babies in the backyard.
Okay.
Right? And some of these girls were depressed, they would kill themselves. So it's a place where you have a lot of vice, a lot of joy, a lot of, you know, emotionally charged relationship, and then death.
So how did you hear about this hotel?
I was walking by one day. This was the days when I was still with Mia, remember? She stayed at Killiney Road, so I would walk past that place pretty often. And I would turn in. You know, this place is not locked. There's light at the end. I'll walk in. Beautiful place. You know, hanging trees and people would just hang out there. I would sit by the bar. The place is dilapidated, right? And you would meet people and you'll talk. And the thing is, when you are sitting in that place, I wasn't the first one to say this, right? Everyone who went there said the same thing. You feel transported out of time and your emotions are not yours. When you go there, you walk through the gates, you sit there, it's almost as if time stopped. So when we talk about haunting, and everyone who's been there can agree that the place is haunted, we don't speak of the place as if it's fearful. We speak of the place with reverence. Like, we know the spirits there, and we respect them. That is why you don't see people saying, oh, that place is haunted, you should go check it out. Anyone who's been there will tell you, the place is haunted, let's keep it this way.
So you bring your crew, you bring in some mediums or psychics with you, and what happens next?
Psychic walked in, and one of the rules of investigation is you don't tell your mediums or psychics the background of the place, right? They come in clean, and they will just point out stuff to you. In fact, they themselves do not want to know the background, because they want to not be affected by that. So when she walked in and she says, this particular room, a lot of ladies, the spirits are still here. One of them is pregnant and she's considering whether she's going to kill the kid or not. She walks off to the other room. She says, someone broke up right here and she killed herself. Not at that spot, but that was where the breakup happened and she hung herself in the room.
Oh, wow.
When we got to the second floor, there was only one man staying there, human, he's alive. And he's been staying there for about 20 years. And he says he came back. He couldn't leave the place. After he left, he was a sailor. He retired. He came back to Singapore to this place and stayed in this hotel for the rest of his life. And he said that he could actually see the old spirits walking around and he felt comfortable with them. He's going to be there till the day he dies.
So the owners of this hotel, at no point did they ever feel, we need to do something to get rid of these spirits lingering around.
No, if only I could find a way to express how it felt. Like when you walk into that place, the spirits are the dominant one. And when we tried to cleanse it, when the psychic was asking the spirits, would you want to go? She found out that no, this is their place. We are in their time. The entire area, the entire hotel, when you walk in, it's not reality anymore. You are walking into their space and their time, feeling their emotions.
Right.
So the way we describe the haunting or the experience with the supernatural in this place, it's not something of fear. It's, yes, they are there. We are in their space.
And how do they make their presence known? Do they even make their presence known? Do they knock on things or, you know, or whispers, make sounds or make things move?
The only thing that moved was a chair. When we investigated, we were asking for some signs. A chair moved without any force, without any wind. It's an old metal, rusted metal chair. That was the only sign we got. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything, but I felt. When I walked along the corridor, it felt crowded. And that's not the kind of feeling you would get in an empty place.
But even then, not a bad feeling.
Not a bad feeling. If you walk in, you feel depressed, sad, melancholy, not fear.
Right.
That being said, if you stay in a place long enough, and I feel, it will make you so depressed and melancholy that it may want you to end your life. So that's the danger that that place possesses.
Okay. Well, that kind of leads me to my next point. What happens in hotels when an awful tragedy, especially those involving death or murder, has taken place?
You could take a leaf out of the Goodwood Park handbook where they got calling an exorcist to clean the place.
Yeah, well, actually, I have done a bit of research and some insiders have come out to actually share what hotel management actually does. And we're going to cover that in our next episode on haunted hotels.
I just want to leave the listeners with one last tip before we end off this podcast. If you go to the next hotel room in your stay and you find 3 iron nails hammered in the door frame, get a new room. Don't even walk in.
Why? What does that mean if there are 3 iron nails?
I'll tell you more on that next week, Tim.
What a cliffhanger. So in the meantime, look forward to our next installment on haunted hotels. Until then, my name is Timo.
My name is Eugene Tay, and you're listening to
Supernatural Confessions.
Supernatural Confessions.